from Radio Vermont, it's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV. It's your show about the people, places, and the issues that matter the most to you. Now here's your host, Dave Graham.
Well, not exactly. I'm Joel Nashman, subbing for Dave Graham today here on the Dave Graham Program. Dave will be back, I believe, in a day or so. So we are playing musical chairs here on WDEV. Okay, and we will I'll give you a little roundup of what we are going to be have happening here on WDEV today. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour at about 10:30, we'll be checking in with the Vermont Health Department, and we will hear from the state epidemiologist, Dr. Patsy Kelso, who will give us an update on the current status of the coronavirus, the COVID-19, with the announcement of the first confirmed case here in the state of Vermont, down south Bennington Way at the Southwestern Medical Center, and what the impact is for the rest of the state and what the advice is for all of us citizens. So that's going to be important. We'll also in the second hour, beginning right around 10 o'clock, be talking with Peter Burke. You know Peter Burke. He is the host of In the Garden, but he is also a guru of indoor gardening, satisfying his craving for green salads, fresh green salads all year long, even during the dark months here in Vermont of the late fall and winter. So he'll be talking a little bit about that and giving us a preview of what's going to be happening as In the Garden, our call-and-talk program on Saturday about all things gardening, will be resuming again this spring. That and so much more here on WDEV FM and AM. We're going to reconnect with our first guest. Let me begin by announcing that he is Lou Stallman. Lou Stallman is a songwriter who has been plying his trade for some 65 years, by my estimation, and is still writing songs, working on a Broadway musical right now. But he has written top 10 and number one songs for Dion and the Belmonts, for Denise Williams, for Laura Nero, for Denise Williams, and a list of Jimmy Bowen, many of the great rockabilly artists and doo-wop artists. And we'll be talking about his career in music and enjoying some of his music during this first hour. His name is Lou Stallman, and are we back on again? Lou, don't hang up the phone. We are here. Lou, good morning to you.
Good morning, Joe.
Oh, we're coming in loud and clear. That's very good. Well, I gave you a little bit of introduction that I guess you didn't hear, but you are we are in contact from your home in New York City, not all that many blocks away from that famous Midtown Brill Building area that was the hub of commercial popular music back beginning in the late 40s, really, when it moved uptown through the 50s and 60s before things started to change in the music world. And you were right in the thick of things in that Brill Building area.
I certainly was. Waterbury, is that the town we're in?
We're in Waterbury, Vermont here, but the tentacles of the Radio Vermont group, WDEV, reach far and wide. We are all through the state of Vermont and into neighboring New Hampshire a little bit, upstate New York, and also a streaming worldwide. So goodness knows there could be somebody in Hong Kong listening to us right now.
Waterbury, it's Lou Stallman from New York City, saying, we love you, Waterbury.
Well, thank you, Lou. Listen, let's hear a song that was really, from my estimation, the first really big hit record that you had. We'll hear the song first, and then you can tell us a little bit about how it came about. If it goes back to 1956, and the artist is Clyde McFadder. And,
correct.
Yep, and the song is Treasure of Love. Let's listen.
The treasure of love is easy to find. It's where
What a beautiful song, Lou, going back to 1956.
Yes, I know.
How did that song come about? How that you'd written a few songs before that, but that one really caught fire. By the way, it was by Clyde McFadder, who had been the lead singer of the original Drifters, and they had some terrific rhythm and blues hits. But it was Atlantic Records' intention to kind of move Clyde McFadder into the spotlight and have him as a solo artist and hopefully a crossover solo artist, so that the mainstream pop market would take an interest in his beautiful tenor voice and buy his records. And this particular song, which you wrote, is the one that turned him over to the pop music market, and he had a top 20 hit with that.
Let me tell you how I wrote it.
Thank you.
My friend Marv used to ride around New York, actually Brooklyn, all night till midnight. And as he rode around, I listened to the radio with him. He was on WINF. And I said, "Marv, what kind of music is this?" And he said, "It's a new teenage music called doo-wop." I said, "Doo-wop? Huh, never heard of it." He said, "Well, that's the big thing today." So I noticed that doo-wop was mostly even notes. And I said, "Oh, well, that's easy. I'll go home." I picked up my guitar, Stella, and said, "Come on, Stella, we got to write a doo-wop song." But I changed it a little bit. I did that instead of continuing through. And that's how I wrote Treasure of Love. And everybody said, "Wow, that was a big doo-wop hit." No. Nobody calls it a doo-wop hit. They call it a classic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Back in those days, the white artist, the Caucasian artist, would very frequently cover or copy a black rhythm and blues song, and thinking that in those early days, of the civil rights movement, when there was real segregation and it extended into the pop culture of music, that I think a half dozen white artists covered the original by Clyde McFadder, but Clyde McFadder has really prevailed as the hit version. Of course, you would benefit as the songwriter, no matter how many people recorded it, under what circumstances.
Of course. Yeah. That's why I'm a songwriter. Mm-hmm.
Well, that is one gorgeous song, and I hear it recorded to this very day by different people. I'm tipping my hand, because I'm going to send you a Treasure of Love discography. I think I've got about 15 different artists who have recorded that song at one time. As an album cut or as a single that did not hit the charts, but the original wonderful one by Clyde McFadder has become, as you say, it's a standard. I want to jump right into, Lou, the song that probably is your all-time biggest hit, but we never know because you're still writing songs and writing good ones. But you had a song that eventually found its way to a fellow that used to be a barber in Canonsburg, Pennsylvania. a lot of people came from Canonsburg. Bobby Vinton did too, and I'm trying to think of a third one, but we're talking about Perry Como. And you got a song to Perry Como, and when I was privileged to meet you not too long ago, you told me that story about how a certain song made it to Perry Como, and I'd love it if you would share it with our WDEV audience.
My pleasure. My partner at that time was a high school principal, and he lived in my neighborhood. And I walked over to him and I said, "I'd like to write songs with you." He said, "Who are you?" He was a principal and I was a student. So he said, come on in. We established a situation whereby he would write 10 lyrics a week and then deliver it to me by Wednesday. I would read the lyrics, and the ones that I liked, I would write songs to. Well, I picked this lyric round and round, and he would set up an appointment with a publisher for Friday. So we'd go to the publisher on Friday, and we went to a new publisher, and we played him the song, and he suddenly picks up the phone and says, I think we got one. Oh, okay, I'll send him over right away. So sure enough, he puts that number down and said, guys, go over to that publisher and play him this song. We didn't know why he did that, but we did it. Went to a second publisher, and we played him the song, and he picked up the phone, called somebody else, and said, I think we got it. I said, what the hell is going on here? So I went to the second publisher, and he said, we got to go to RCA Victor. I said, oh, okay. Go to RCA Victor, and we get to a man sitting behind the desk like a stalker, you know, with his hands crossed over. Mm-hmm. And it was Steve Scholes.
Oh, yes.
And I said, Steve Scholes, wow. So he said, okay, my partner gave him the lyric, gave me a lyric. I took out my guitar, and I started to sing. So I sang it once. He says, can you please play it again? Sure, my pleasure. Meanwhile, this is not a Treasure of Love. Treasure of Love was 24 measures. This song is 64 measures. It isn't an easy song. So I sang it again. He says, can you do me a favor and do it one more time? So now I look at my publisher's eyes, and I say, is he deaf? Is he deaf? I'm singing it three times now. Just sing it one more time. I sing it a third time. Would you believe he says, please, one more time. God bless him. Four times, and I wasn't through. After that, he asked me to sing it a fifth time and a sixth time, and I said, listen, I'm not singing it anymore. If you can't hear it after six times, I don't want to play it anymore. I'm getting tired. So he said, okay, I'm sorry. I go home, and my publisher calls me up and says, Lou, Perry Como's going to record this song on Friday and then perform it on TV on his Saturday show. I said, are you kidding? He said, no, I'm serious. I said, I'm a millionaire. Well, and sure enough, I got my family together, plus Joe's family together. We met in front of the television set, and that morning, I heard it on the radio, and it started like this. And I said, couldn't they afford a bass player? Or a guitar player? I mean, what's this drum alone? But then I found out they added the drum later, then they added the guitarist, then they added a bass player, and then a chorus. It was magnificent. Need I tell you, I've sold about 30 million copies
of this record. And we're going to find out why Steve Scholes, the artist and repertoire director from RCA, big wheel at RCA at the time, why he asked to hear it over and over again. Let us hear this marvelous song from the pen of Lou Stallman, our guest this morning, Perry Como's number one hit, Round and Round.
Find a wheel and it goes round, round, round as it skims along with a happy sound as it goes. along the ground, 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 till it leads you to the one you love. Then your love will hold you round, 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 in your heart's a song with a brand new sound, and your head go spinning round, 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 'cause you found what you've been dreaming of. In the night you see the oval moon going round and round in tune, and the ball of sun in the day makes a girl and boy wanna say, find the ring,
find the ring,
and put it round, 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 and with ties so strong, the two hearts are bound, put it on, the one you found, 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 for you know that this is really love. Find a wee, and it goes round, 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 as it skims along, with a happy sound as it goes. Along the ground, 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 till it leads you to the one you love. Then your love, you'll hold around, round, round, in your heart's a song, a brand new sound, and your head go spinning round, 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 'cause you found what you've been dreaming of. In the night you see the over moon, sun in the day makes a girl and boy wanna say, find the ring and put it round, 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 and with ties so strong, your two hearts are bound, put it on, the one you found, 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 for you know that this is really love. Find the ring, put it on, for you know that this is really love, really love, really love.
Well, there it is, a number one record written by Lou Stallman, our guest today. And Lou, obviously, Steve Scholes was figuring out how to sing the song in rounds in his mind. That's why he kept asking.
Exactly, exactly. He was doing the rondelay, but he could have told me,
yeah,
I'm doing it. But he didn't. He just said, could you please have this? I wanted to belt him in the head.
But I guess when the first royalty check came in, you felt a little better about it. Wonderful. We have to take a little bit of a break. The rounds were performed by the Ray Charles Singers. Nothing to do with the soul man Ray Charles, but Ray Charles is the Ray Charles Singers' real name, and the Mitchell Ayers Orchestra. They did a beautiful job on your song. Lou, you told me that at one of your seminars on songwriting, that the best way to write a pop song is to work with a collaborator, and many do, and you usually do, don't you?
Oh, absolutely, because you can't write alone and do a demo alone, do the song, because everything ends up being you. You want a melding of many people. So I usually, if somebody recommended a collaborator to me and said, would you write with them? I said, sure, come on. And I always got them records.
Yeah, yep. I've in trying to put together what we call a discography in our radio business, I have found that you have collaborated with many of the artists who recorded the songs as well. Dealing with someone who really knows the structure of pop music and what hooks are needed to reach the attention of music programmers, and then of course eventually the people that went out to buy the record. What your songwriting rose to prominence just at the time that the rock and roll era had taken hold, and you seem to have a great knack for writing songs that appeal to young teenagers. We have a bottom of the hour break for a quick bit of news, but we're going to come out of that break, Lou, with a song that you wrote for Dion and the Belmonts. And indeed, they were the heroes of my neighborhood growing up in the Bronx at East 233rd Street. That's way in the northeast corner of the Bronx, but just down a ways was that Belmont section, Belmont Avenue, and that's where these four young guys got together and started singing on the street corners. And Lou Stallman wrote one of the most amazing Dion and the Belmont hit songs in their entire catalog. So that's coming up shortly, but we take a break on the half hour for CBS News, a few messages. We'll be right back.
As the winter rolls on, we're on sale upstairs at the Warren Store. All fall winter clothing is 20 and 25% off. Cozy tops, comfy bottoms, warm coats and jackets for men and women. Cool, Prana, Smartwool, Save the Duck, Kari Tra long underwear. Need a hat? We have Skeeta, Shukas, Papia, and more. Palms and beanies galore. And a large selection of socks from fun to functional, blue Q to darn tough. Spring clothing is arriving, so come on down for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. The almost world-famous Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village.
Carlo Mastrangelo, Angelo De Leo, Freddie Milano, and Dion DiMucci. From the Bronx, USA, my old neighborhood, Dion and the Belmonts. Our guest today is songwriter Lou Stallman. You wrote that song, didn't you, Lou?
Yes, I did. And the next hit I had, Pete DeAngelis, a producer, called me and said, "Can you write me another Don't Pity Me? I need it for Frankie Avalon." I said, "Well, I'll try." So I literally took the chord structure of Don't Pity Me and repeated it and wrote a song called A Boy Without a Girl. And I had to put it under my sister-in-law's name because my partner wanted it in ASCAP and I was a BMI rider. So,
yeah.
I got up. Go ahead.
No, I know that is done a lot. The Dion and the Belmonts recorded for Laurie Records, and by coincidence, not only did you place a lot of material with Laurie Records, that was the one record company that employed me for a stretch before they, got wise about things. But I was there when they were listening to a Ricky Nelson song, Poor Little Fool, and they were telling Doc Pomus to write another song based on those chords. And I play a little guitar, and I know the chords are all the same. Ricky Nelson's big hit, Poor Little Fool, turned into Teenager in Love for Dion and the Belmonts, the song that was their hit right after Don't Pity Me. So.
Right.
But, so that Frankie Avalon song. Well, you know, they say there's nothing new under the sun, but, boy, you recycle something in a slight change. Sometimes it makes all the difference in the world, and you get some amazing songs that have interesting derivations. Lou Stallman, our guest today, I want to, you know, time is just going by so quickly, but we have to do... the song that you wrote for a major league sports team. I warn you in advance, Lou, that we are in Red Sox country up here in Vermont. So it's a good thing you're safe back in Manhattan, because we don't have to worry about people coming with tar and feathers. But you wrote the official New York Yankees song.
Right.
Now, tell me, let's play a little bit of the instrumental version of the song. I remind our listeners, even though our listeners are dedicated Red Sox fans and listen to all 162 Red Sox games broadcast here on WDEV, maybe once or twice you tuned into a Yankees game and you heard the Yankees theme music, which to this very day, since about 1967 or so, to this very day, in the year 2020, is the music you hear at the start of every New York Yankees radio broadcast. Yes, indeed, the New York Yankees. Everybody from Joe DiMaggio on. Tell me how you got to write that song, that melody.
Well, a couple of guys came into the office and they said, are you Lou Stallman? No, I'm signed in. He said, no, we're bringing in a team into New York and we're calling it the Mets, but we need a song for the Mets. I said, I'm sorry, I don't write theme songs and I don't write jingles. So my boss at CBS Music Publishing Company said, we own the New York Yankees and they need a theme song. Are you interested? Well, the New York Yankees, I'm interested. So I went home, wrote the song. I wrote the first verse, the lyrics and the music.
Yeah, we point out that there are lyrics, and we're going to hear those up and coming, but we just heard the instrumental version that's used on the broadcast these days. But back earlier, they used the vocal version as well. Sorry to interrupt, Lou, but I wanted to inform our listeners.
That's okay. So I told my boss that I wrote the first verse, the lyrics, but I'm blocked. I can't write anymore. So he said, well, bring the song back to the office, and I'll take a look at it. I said, okay. And then I said, gotcha. Gotcha, you son of a bee. If you write the lyric, I know I'm going to get the theme song.
That's right. There were other competitors, yeah.
Oh, sure. So I came down, and I read him the lyric, and he said, great lyric. Go down and have dinner on me and come back. I came back and he finished the whole song. I said, wow, I love it. I love it. You have to do certain things. You do it.
Yeah, well, that was very good. Obviously, if the guy that's choosing what song wins is a co-composer of one of them, that's the one he's going to choose. Brilliant.
That's right.
Brilliant logic. We're going to hear now. You wrote the lyrics, and they were recorded with the Sid Bass Orchestra and Chorus. Sid Bass was a major orchestra leader and arranger for a lot of groups, and on his own. But he did a great job on the Yankee song. And as we hear the vocal version by the Sid Bass Orchestra and Chorus, there's one point where Lou Stallman, where Lou, come in, and it's the part where a guy just shouts out of nowhere, "Come on, hit it over the wall!" Right?
Right.
That's you in the recording studio. So
that's right.
Yeah. So listen for Lou himself on this one as we hear the vocal version, which was played back on television and radio quite frequently in the early days of the Yankees broadcast, and every now and then it still comes back as well. So here is the vocal version of the Yankee song written by Lou Stallman. My spelling lessons for today. What a great piece of history right there, and the fact that it's still being used, the music being used for the broadcast today, quite amazing. Although I'm wondering if my tires are slashed outside the studio, because this is really Red Sox country here. But there is in Burlington, there's a Yankees affiliate, and I have to I've admitted a few times I'm one of the few Yankees fans that tries to survive here in Red Sox country, but all in good spirit, and the boys of summer coming up. But Lou, this is the radio station that you're talking to me at that does broadcast all the Red Sox games. But it must be a thrill every time you hear that on the radio, isn't it?
By the way, that song is for sale.
Right, so someone interested in the publishing and the original demo of that song you've mentioned to me, and we're working on that. That could be a wonderful piece of both music and Yankees memorabilia. So
collectible, yes.
Yeah, anybody interested? you could contact me. I'll put you right in touch with Lou Stallman. Now, Motown Records, Berry Gordy, the founder of Motown, a very astute man. Not only did he find the talent and the musicians, but smart enough business-wise to maintain rights to all the publishing of the songs that he took on for Motown artists, so that over time it kind of becomes an annuity. So a closed shop, so to speak. So my question to Lou Stallman is, how does a New York City songwriter managed to write a hit that it becomes a big hit for Motown Supremes?
Well, I wrote the song, and my good friend Gary Katz, the producer of Asia, I mean Steely Dan.
Mm-hmm.
He asked me for a song that he's going to record a black artist, and he never records a black artist because he has enough work with Steely Dan.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked for a song. I said, I have one. He said, come on down. I went to his office, played a piano, played Everybody's Got the Right to Love. He said, you're on. Friday I'm recording it. He recorded it with a guy, but it didn't come out soulful enough. Now, Motown at that time told all engineers of all studios, if you find a song that you feel is a Motown-type song, let us know. We'll pay you. So somebody found Everybody's Got the Right to Love that Gary recorded and told Motown. So I'm sitting in the kitchen, and I get a phone call. And I pick up the phone, and it's a guy named Mickey Stevenson. So I said, how can I help you? He said, did you write a song called Everybody's Got the Right to Love? I said, yes. He said, well, we would like to buy it. I said, I'm sorry. I don't sell songs. He said, who's your lawyer? I said, oh, he's going to play that game. So call my lawyer. My lawyer called me 2 minutes later. Hello? You want to sell a song to Motown? No. Okay. Thank you. Hung up. next weekend, I pick up the news, the music business papers, and I see my song is there, and it says I wrote it, and it says I published it. Those sneaky people. They already recorded it. They just took a last shot to see if they could get the publishing. Well, they didn't. And the next thing I know, it's on the air.
Yeah, it becomes a top 40 hit, big hit for the Supremes. So, yeah, they tried to bamboozle you a little bit and sacrifice the publishing for like a one-time purchase. But over time, every time this record gets played somewhere, every time somebody buys a Supremes anthology, there this song is. Let's hear the Lou Stallman written "Everybody's Got the Right to Love" as recorded by the Supremes.
Say I. You're alone and in a corner. Your only mortar is a face that appears in the nearest mirror. You've got to get it going and somehow.
Yes, indeed. There we have Everybody's Got the Right to Love, the Supreme. What a wonderful song. That was plenty soulful, Lou.
I know. I loved it. As a matter of fact, I wrote it when I was depressed, and I was only depressed once in my life. And I have a bed next to a wall, and I woke up in the middle of the night crying because I was very lonely. And I said in the wall, to the wall, "I love you, Lou. Don't worry. I love you, my friend." And that's how I wrote Everybody's Got the Right to Love.
A song with an important social and personal message, indeed. Wow. Well, you know, we have some 400 more songs, 495 more songs we could talk about, but the hour has gone by very quickly. Lou, I want to thank you.
Jerry Potente wants to sing a song to you.
Well, okay. Is that the one I was going to play? Is it the We the People?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, would you, well, why don't you sing the song as we fade out into our news on the top of the hour? This is Lou's son, Jerry. Jerry, Lou, are you ready? Jerry, are you ready to sing?
Yes, I am, Joel.
Okay, good to talk to you.
Come on.
Okay, so sing the song, and this is how we'll go out with our interview with Lou Stallman and Jerry Potente, great singer and songwriter in his own right. Go ahead, Jerry.
We the people are gonna make this world a better place. We're gonna put on a smile to everybody's face. We the people, we gotta let them know that we are one. We're gonna hold hands together, 'cause our world has just begun.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
To play the record.
Okay, and that song has gone in and out of Broadway and I think has a great future ahead of it. You know, Lou, you always told me that you always look forward to the next song, and after, you know, some 60 years plus in songwriting, my goodness, you still have new material that's very, very promising and, of course, very encouraging in these difficult times socially and politically. What a wonderful song.
Can you play it?
Well, yeah, we'll make a point of playing. We're heading up to the top of the hour news-wise right now, so I will make a point of playing it my next music get-together here. We have been playing it, but we have to head up to the top of the hour for our 9 o'clock CBS News here on WDEV. So definitely, Lou, we're going to have to do a part two on this as you continue writing some wonderful, wonderful songs. And we didn't even get around to hearing from Aretha Franklin and Gene Pitney and Jimmy Bowen and all the many other songs that you wrote, including some of my favorite doo-wop songs. So, WDEV.
Oh, wow.
Okay, thank you so much for being with us, Lou.
As the winter rolls on, we're on sale upstairs at the Warren Store. All fall winter clothing is 20 and 25% off. Cozy tops, comfy bottoms, warm coats and jackets for men and women. Cool, Prana, Smartwool, Save the Duck, Kari Tra long underwear. Need a hat? We have Skeeta, Shukas, Papia, and more. Palms and beanies galore. And a large selection of socks from fun to functional, blue Q to darn tough. Spring clothing is arriving, so come on down for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. The almost world-famous Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village.
It's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV FM and AM.
And once again, Joel Nagemann here, subbing for Dave Graham today on WDEV FM and AM. Coming up at about 10:30 or so, we'll be getting a report from the Vermont Health Department. We'll be hearing from the state epidemiologist, Dr. Batsy Kelso, who will give us an update on the current situation with the coronavirus, COVID-19, the first confirmed case in Vermont, a patient at the Southwestern Medical Center down in Bennington in isolation, but what impact and what ramifications this has for the rest of us here in the state of Vermont during this growing pandemic that has seems to be the number one item on the news, and with a very good reason. Well, we always like to look toward the brighter things, and I know when temperatures suddenly, you know, get up to around 50 degrees in March. March is a cruel month because as soon as you want to put out the lawn chair, then we get another cold spell that comes right in and freezes your pipes. But we do think spring, and a great feeling of deja vu right now because I think we've done this before. Peter Burke and I on the air together. Peter, thank you for being our guest this portion on the Dave Graham Show.
It is my pleasure, Joel. And as you say, the days are getting longer, and it's starting to feel a little bit like spring. Of course, we'll get some surprises, but I started my onions and my broccoli this year. First time ever that I've actually bought a light from Johnny's Seeds and doing sets myself. I've always bought the sets and stuff, but so it's fun, and we've got greens in the window, so we're in good shape.
Yeah, when you talk about greens in the window, there comes a time in which a lot of the stored squash and everything seem to run down to pretty close to the bottom, but there you are, Peter, with a big bowl of fresh salad greens, and I thought that we would take an opportunity right now in advance of the soon to be in the garden program here on WDEV on Saturday mornings. We'll have the official announcement from Lee Cattell coming up in a week or so, but we're getting right down, counting down to that. But I did want to take the opportunity to talk about, first of all, your book, Year-Round Indoor Salad Gardening, and the techniques that you've developed that people can, just using their indoor windowsills, have fresh salad greens all year round. Give us an introduction to that.
It's a very simple method. It's similar to microgreens, but you don't need any lights. So I always like to give an example. In a shelf that's 20 inches wide and 6 feet tall, you can grow a pound of salad greens every day with no lights or no special equipment, just small trays. And I keep it so that it's you plant just a little bit every day or every other day, and you harvest a little bit every day. And so that way it works real well.
The most interesting thing about that is that I'm one of those people that when it really does get down to the depth of winter, that I'm there in the supermarket looking at the expiration dates of the bags of mixed salad. I think of Peter harvesting off your windowsill.
Well, and, my wife was saying, boy, you buy those containers and then you have all this plastic to recycle. And, she was grousing about having tons of plastic to recycle. And I said, well, we don't have to do that. We've got these fresh greens and we don't have to recycle any of it. Just we reuse our trays. And mostly we're planting in ceramic bowls and things like that, not... no plastic or anything. So the technique is real simple, and I've taught it many, many times over the last 10 years. You soak your seeds, you plant them on soil, not like sprouts, they're not like a jar, so you only have to water them once a day and not three times a day. So it is real simple and well suited for people who work all day and can only get to tend to their little indoor garden once a day. And I usually will plant in the evenings and then I'll water afterwards and harvest. So it's a nice rhythm, and it's a great cure for the winter blues and cabin fever, and you get to see these growing things, and a lot of the things that I grow are very colorful, like certain kinds of radishes. A Hong Vit radish is a bright, bright red stem, and the buckwheat that we grow has a nice pink stem to it and beautiful green leaves. So it's a lot of fun to do, besides which you're saving tons of money on fresh greens, and they will simply be the absolute freshest thing you will ever eat, because you're going to cut them, put in your salad bowl, and and dig in. That's real simple.
Yeah, and you can't get any fresher than that.
That's it.
Right from garden to salad bowl.
That's the way.
One thing I'd like to emphasize is that, you know, whenever one takes on a project of a different sort, let's say you want to, start some of your for outdoor plants indoors, and so you get the grow lights, and you might want to buy the stand and everything, and by the time you add up all the equipment, which, of course, is available, and a tremendous, starting price in order to get all the equipment. You've always emphasized you use bowls that just happen to be around. People can start this program without having to invest initially a lot of money.
No, that's right. And, even no matter where you buy your seeds, it comes down to about $2 a pound, which you just can't beat anywhere for that kind of freshness. You just can't beat it. And, we're blessed in Vermont to have, wonderful greens from all over, all the different market farms, market gardens around. And it's a real blessing.
And you really now you must have some that are just getting ready to be harvested, while the ones you harvest today. So you've timed this all out and put it in your book. So the two people that I know that are following the procedures that you have outlined in your book, which by the way is Year Round Indoor Salad Gardening by Peter Burke, and they say, just follow the directions. If there's a shortcut, Peter has found it. You're not going to find shorter shortcuts. And, I know you're pretty fastidious about the way you do things. And that is a big plus when it comes to something like this. Because once you've got the pattern down, as you say, you've got your salads all year round.
Well, just like in my outdoor garden, I've managed to make every mistake there is. So, I sort of honed it down to. And I was doing a workshop down in New Hampshire, and the lady came up to me, and she grows, salad greens, as a business, right? And she was saying, "Well, how do you prevent this, and how do you prevent that?" And I was like, "Well, it's all outlined in this book, and if you follow it, you're gonna get that." And then she wanted to tell me why I needed to put compost in there, and why I wasn't using the right soil, and why. And I was like, "Oh yeah, okay." But it's so simple to, it's just germination mix. And I only add a little bit of compost and a little bit of sea kelp at the very, very bottom of the tray. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, by the time the roots are down there, they have just the small bit of nutrition that they need to keep going for, more than 7 days. So from the time you plant your seed to the time you do your harvest is about 7 to 10 days. It's a very fast turnaround. And, by planting just a little bit every day, it doesn't take much space to actually, go from seed to salad. You're going to save a lot of room because you're just growing enough to plant for a day. There's no big, huge trays. It's one of those sort of small is beautiful concepts. Is if you plant a little bit every day and harvest a little bit every day, or every other day, depending, it's not going to take a lot of room in your house. I use a cupboard up over the refrigerator. My fridge, because it's nice and warm up there. And then I have another bookshelf if I want to grow more that's right down near the wood stove all winter long. So that's nice and cozy and warm, and it's just for those first 4 days. And I always like to say, is any garden instruction that starts out with do nothing for the first 4 days, I kind of like, you plant them and then do nothing.
Well, I'm always good if that's part of the instruction list. The do nothing part is the part I get down pretty quickly. Talking with Peter Burke. By the way, if Peter will be with us for about another 15 minutes or so, if you have a question, 244-1777, our lines are open.
Absolutely.
And toll free, 877-291-8255. So 802-244-1777. That's usually your job to mention the telephone.
That was good. Is it time to mention the sponsors? No, right. No, well, not yet.
We hope that they'll all be coming back. No, I get my onion sets from Montpelier Agway and everything. I love making the rounds.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that great? Yeah. Everything's starting to move, and that's great. And this year on the show, I did the garden basics. That was my focus in the show. And then last year was sort of like try something new. That was what we were talking about. And this year, basically, it's a garden per person, garden with purpose. More or less, one of the questions that I hear quite a lot, well, how much of this should I plant and how much of that should I plant? So for, one person, I just sat down with, well, what's the daily requirement, for vegetables? What's the daily requirement for fruits? And it comes down to about 450 pounds for one person for one whole year. And so I went through and started to figure out, well, how many pounds of produce can I get from a broccoli plant or a cabbage plant or a tomato plant? And I came up with the formulas for planting per person, how much to plant per person. And that should make for an interesting show, at least I find it kind of an interesting thing because you go and you buy seeds and you think, oh, I like these and oh, I like those and oh, I like this and that looks pretty. And, you're looking at these beautiful pictures, but you have to sit down and figure out, well, how much room do you actually have? How much do you really want? And I get, sort of like with your brother who plants 100 tomatoes. If I planted that many tomatoes, we would be overwhelmed, So it's a fun challenge in garden planning is to say, well, how much do I need for the two of us or for the four of us or for the six of us,
Well, that makes sense, that when it was the, basic necessity to grow your own, obviously rural families learned pretty quickly what their limits were and what they needed to do and not wasting any surplus. It's, the mistakes that I have made, I've got a supermarket right down the road, if everything else fails, but... it's going through the seed catalog and saying, oh, doesn't that look exotic?
I remember beautiful pictures.
I remember the first year that I said, I'm not a big salsa person, but I like the way those tomatillo plants. I had enough tomatillos for the entire neighborhood. I mean, clearly,
yeah. It was put up. Similar thing happened to me.
it's like with the the zucchinis. We let them go. But you've been into the square foot gardening approach for least 10, 15 years now, and that kind of organizes things for you, doesn't it?
Well, it helps you plan for sure, and it definitely helps to organize things because I'll sit down and figure, okay, well, I've got 12 tomato plants, and I put each one of the tomato plants on a trellis, and that's I have on the north side of my, 4x4 bed, and then on the front side I'll plant 12 broccoli plants or 12 kale plants or 12 collard plants. And so as I try to figure out how much I actually need, I can say, okay, well, I'm going to plant these 12 plants here. And so how much room will it actually take? So in the first analysis so far is a garden for two people. Would it be about 900 pounds of vegetables, and it would take about 24 4x4 squares to do that with a trellis on the back of each one. And so I've got that all mapped out, and I know just just how much of each one that I'm going to plant. So if you take your list and you go to Cape Farm or to, you know, one of the Agway or to Blue Seal Feeds or any of those places, you can say, okay, well, I want 12 of those. That's 2 6-packs. And then I want this many tomato plants. That's those 6-packs. So you're actually buying with a purpose. You know exactly where you're going to put them. You know you have enough room for them. And I do now. I have started actually planting tomatillas. I make a salsa out of them, a fresh salsa that's fantastic. Joel, I'll have to bring some in for you. And then I can some of that, and I use that in my bean dishes during the winter. So that's a fun part.
Well, you know, I don't really have to worry about space requirements in my backyard. It's plenty big enough for anything that I need. But the more space I take, the more I have to weed, and so that it has become a major consideration. And one thing I learned from you was trellising the cucumbers, because we'd love to, use a lot of cucumbers for gazpacho and everything, and just for basic salad. Just love cucumber. Haven't done any pickling in a while, but I was tempted to. One year, my grandparents used to do that all the time. In fact, one of my favorite sayings is when I'm talking gardening, and we do take an organic approach to gardening. I know, Peter, you have, and Ed Smith before that, emphasizing the organic approach to gardening. On a refrigerator at a place that I frequent, there's someone had pinned a note: try organic food, or what your grandparents called food.
I love it. Yes, I love it.
So that's what it's
That goes right along with what you're saying too, is that that postcard that I think that we shared, well, the two girls coming out of the garden, and it says, you know, this is the supermarket in 1940, you know, where they were coming out of their garden.
That was
where you went shopping. It was down in the cold cellar or in the pantry.
I remember when I was a kid, they said, well, they need a little help on the farm up the road. I was about 12 years old, and they were digging a cellar to store their apples for over the winter. And in that ground, they stored perfectly, but I'll never forget the amount of effort over 3 or 4 days of digging that huge thing. But he goes, that's the way you do it. You know, we don't use refrigerators. We don't use this. We don't use that. And they got best Cortland and McIntosh apples. I can remember them tasting. I did want to ask you one more thing about the indoor salad gardening. You know, obviously a lot of the greens that you can grow are delicious as little greens, but they might not be the kind of thing you would imagine eating in your salad when they grow up. What are some of the more interesting, you know, plants that, you know, species of plants that you've tried as salad greens that you like?
Well, the basic ones that I use, you know, day to day is, of course, sunflower, and I think everybody's familiar with pea shoots. And then I also grow buckwheat, which makes a very nice, delicate, not a big producer, but it's a very nice sort of tart flavor, sweet and sour sort of flavor. And then, of course, radishes, and there's about 5 or 6 different varieties of radishes. Some are a little more hot than others, and some are pink, and some are, bright red, and some are perfectly white. And then I grow also broccoli, which grows very well. Not a huge producer the way the peas and the sunflower are, but French lentils make a very nice sort of like a pea shoot. And I grow mustard greens and mostly things like an arugula. Now, the mustards and the arugula and that size can be very, very hot. Mm-hmm. So I mostly put them in a mix. Uh-huh. And that way, by putting them in a mix, you get a little hot and some of the exotic flavors that you have with them. And in that way, you're not you're not burning the insides of your stomach.
Yeah, I love mustard greens, mixing them with a little, mixing a few of those with baby spinach. They're so good. I think we have a caller on the line. We're heading up to the half hour, but we have plenty of time to invite Monty from Montpelier in. Monty, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I had a guy tell me that if I sprinkle a thin layer, like a half-inch layer of what he called cow salt, in my asparagus bed, that would help keep the weeds at bay. Can you comment on that?
That's a common old practice. I tried it. It didn't necessarily keep the weeds at bay. It set them back for a year, but asparagus is one of the few vegetables that actually likes salt. And matter of fact, out in Pennsylvania, where my dad has his farm, you know, you see wild asparagus growing along the roadsides because they salt the roads quite a bit. But as far as keeping the weeds down, it's a temporary thing. You know, you're gonna have to weed them. Even so, it'll help a little bit, but you know, it's not gonna work perfectly for forever. But the asparagus don't mind the salt, and it is possible to sort of overload it with salt. So you want to do that judiciously. If you're really and have a lot of grass in there, sure, go ahead, but don't plan to do it every year. It's not gonna keep the weeds down. You got to get in there and get those weeds down. And try when you do your salt, right? Try a really good mulch on top of it, because that'll be a long lasting, you know, prevention to bring, you know, the weeds coming up rather than the salt.
What would you recommend for a mulch?
I like straw. Straw has the least amount of weed seed in it. Hay, I would definitely not, because just think about broadcasting dandelion seeds in your garden, and you've got an image of what you'll get with hay. The, you know, peat moss, certainly that's weed free. Any one of those things work really well.
Okay, great.
Boy, thank you for your call.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Lee Cattell is in the other studio, and I'm sure he is planning. he's doing our engineering today, planning on the setting things up for the start of In the Garden. So we'll have official announcement before too much longer. And we've been mentioning, of course, to our listeners, a year-round indoor salad gardening. Let me see. Look at the book. I know there's a subtitle: How to Grow Nutrient-Dense Soil-Sprouted Greens in Less Than 10 Days, and just marvelous. Peter, how can people find out more about your book? It's available at all local bookstores.
That's the thing. Just go to the bookstore and ask for it, and you can see a preview of it online. That's for sure. Chelsea Green. I'm working with your neighbors there, Edgework Creative, Ed and Cindy, and we're doing a new website called howto.garden rather than howtogarden.com. It's just howto.garden. So that's in the works. And the dailygardener.com was compromised, so we're just starting out with a brand new one, and they're great people to work with. I've really enjoyed them. So that'll be online soon.
Okay.
Howto.garden.
And we're looking for the start of the In the Garden program. One of my projects this year is to really test all the non-lethal approaches to pests in the garden. I don't know. It's kind of a thing with me. And if I have to buy tiger urine,
oh goodness!
I don't know. I don't know which of our sponsors would sell that.
But we'll talk more about
it. We'll talk more about that. That was actually somebody's recommendation. You know that?
Yeah. Oh, I do.
Talk to you again, Peter. Thank you so much.
Take care, Joel. Yeah. Anytime. Bye.
As the winter rolls on, we're on sale upstairs at the Warren Store. All fall winter clothing is 20 and 25% off. Cozy tops, comfy bottoms, warm coats and jackets for men and women. Cool, Prana, Smartwool, Save the Duck, Kari Tra long underwear. Need a hat? We have Skeeta, Shukas, Papia, and more. Palms and beanies galore. And a large selection of socks from fun to functional, blue cute to darn tough. Spring clothing is arriving, so come on down for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. The almost world-famous Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village.
News Radio, WDEV, FM, and AM. Now back to the Dave Graham Show.
And again, Joel Nadjman here in for Dave today. Of course, the big news is that it was yesterday that health officials here in Vermont announced the first case of COVID-19 in Vermont. There is a patient in isolation at the Southwestern Medical Center in Bennington. And it's our pleasure right now to have state epidemiologist Patsy Kelso on the line. I know you're very busy. This is a very important topic, and thank you for taking the time to share with our WDEV listeners.
You're welcome.
Tell us what the current state of the situation is and what we as a regular Vermont citizen should be aware of and what should we be doing in precautionary measures.
Well, currently we do have one case that has tested presumptive positive at our state public health lab. Per routine, what all the states are doing is if their own state labs identify a positive result, those specimens go to the CDC lab for confirmation. So that's in progress right now, but we're treating it as the other states are, as a confirmed case, and doing a contact investigation around that case to identify people the case may have been in contact with who may now be incubating the illness or, you know, showing symptoms. So we're taking lots of calls from concerned people, and there's, as you said, lots of interest in this around the state, not just around the one case, but among lots of Vermonters who have recently traveled to countries where there's COVID-19 illness. And so there's lots of activity and lots of responding as well as planning that we're doing here at the health department.
As the state epidemiologist, I know you have regular things that are of your daily concern. I imagine things are just going extremely rapid right now. How have you had to change what you're doing in terms of your day-to-day work with regard to this current pandemic?
We have had to make a lot of adjustments. We've brought in some staff from other programs in the health department, lots of them, and we've even brought in a public health nurse from one of our district offices, and she's the primary point person for the routine day-to-day stuff that we deal with, like, you know, salmonella infections and reports of other diseases like pertussis.
The current patient down in Bennington at the Southwestern Medical Center, listening and watching yesterday's press conference with Dr. Mark Levine and Governor Scott, that they pointed out, the doctor pointed out that the patient is in an airborne infection isolation room. How effective and how isolated is an isolation room of that type?
That is the appropriate level of care and precaution to be taking with a disease that's a respiratory viral infection like this one. The hospital is following CDC and health department recommendations, and we understand that all precautions are in place. There should be no risk to any healthcare workers or other patients at the hospital.
In the adjacent state of New York, the governor has declared a state of emergency. He did say that was just to facilitate all the things that may be done with over 100 cases in the Empire State confirmed so far. Do you anticipate the possibility of our governor having to declare a state of emergency somewhere down the line?
I think that remains to be seen. It's possible, but we're still very much working in parallel tracks. One, containment, so identifying cases and doing contact investigations around those cases to identify any other cases, putting appropriate restrictions in place. So if someone is exposed and they need to stay home for 14 days, that sort of thing. So that's the containment part, trying to find all the cases and prevent spread. And then there's also the mitigation part that we're doing at the same time. So planning for things like, should we close schools or should we advise certain parts of the population not to do certain activities? So right now, those things are much more planning than in the implementation phase, but we're doing both approaches at the same time.
Yes, always err on the side of caution. I know two schools in Williston are closed because a staff member was in contact with somebody that had traveled somewhere. So I know that people are taking steps in advance. The average listener to our program, the average Vermont citizen who doesn't think that they have been in contact but would like more information, and we don't want to, you know, obviously bother very busy people with telephone calls, they can find out information on a daily basis by going on the internet. How would they do that?
The best place to go is the health department website. We have tons of information and lots of visitors.
Okay, well, we lost Patsy Kelsey.
I'm sorry, Joel, that was my mistake. Patsy's still with us.
Oh, okay. Yeah, could you give us the website once again, please?
Sure. The health department website is healthvermont, all one word, all spelled out, .gov, healthvermont.gov, or people can call 211 if they have general questions.
Okay, and the five basic ways to lower one's risk of getting sick. I took this off. We all talk about the washing of one's hands, the alcohol-based hand sanitizers, and, of course, not touching your face, and trying to avoid those places where a virus might be spread. In other parts of the country, major music festivals have been canceled and the like. Haven't seen much of that in Vermont, but people can be cautious if they feel that's the best approach for what they need to do.
Sure. The overall risk is still low, but I think we're going to see this infection spreading in more Vermont communities. So we have to be alert to that. And if you are someone who's at higher risk of severe complications, so an older person or someone with underlying medical conditions like diabetes, heart disease, or pulmonary disease, those people may want to be extra cautious about where they choose to go or things they choose to do in the upcoming weeks.
Makes a lot of intuitive sense. I know you're very busy, so we thank you for taking the time to be with us today. State epidemiologist Patsy Kelso, we'll talk again, and I thank you this morning.
You're welcome.
We're going to talk a little bit about the gains that the Progressive Party has made in the city of Burlington with this the city council election results this past town meeting day. But before we talk with the executive director of Vermont's Progressive Party, go back to Lee Cattell, because we're anticipating what the Norwich University champion men's cadet hockey team will be facing in their next round. Lee?
Yeah, thanks, Joel. The Norwich men, they have made the selection pairings for the men's hockey tournament, and Norwich is off this weekend. They get a bye for the opening round. So their next game will be next Saturday night at Kreuzberg Arena. And they will play the winner of a game this Saturday night between Endicott and Plymouth State College. So there's a play-in game between Endicott and Plymouth State. And then the winner will play Norwich 1 week from Saturday night at Kreuzberg Arena.
And we'll have that on WDEV.
Absolutely. And one other note, the Norwich women will play a play-in game this Wednesday evening. It appears as though it will be a home game against Amherst, and that'll be 7 o'clock Wednesday night at Kreuzberg Arena. So that's the latest from Norwich hockey. We'll have more coming up during the noon hour sports here on WDEV FM and AM.
Okay, thank you very kindly. Yeah, boy, congratulations to the Norwich cadets, both men and women team. And I still can't believe that young Frenchman goalie that they have there.
9 shutouts and counting.
Boy, I tell you, wow, what an amazing feat that is. Well, we invite to the WDEV airwaves right now Josh Ronsky. He's executive director of Vermont's Progressive Party. And I imagine things were quite elated following the election results coming in Tuesday night, Josh, as the progressives now, for the first time ever, I guess, a clear majority in the city of Burlington City Council.
Yeah, no, it was, and thanks so much for having me on. It was a very exciting night last Tuesday, and it was really years of hard work that went into kind of making this happen. Right now we're just looking forward to getting our people ready to assume their new roles as city councilors and begin passing passing resolutions. So it's a very exciting day.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, of course, the Ward 1 results in which Sharon Bushar, who had been a member of the council for over 30 years, was defeated by the newcomer Zariah Hightower. I'm in my 70s, so I've been following what's been happening in and around Burlington since it was a board of aldermen and since the mayor's job was actually a part-time job. But I'm displaying my age. But I guess that preface is just to say that what may have been a set of progressive ideas and policy ideals 30 years ago is really not what the progressive movement is today.
Well, yeah, and I want to say I have tremendous respect for Sharon Bushar. She's done an incredible job on city council for decades in fighting for, you know, and advancing many progressive issues. And I think what we're seeing today is yes, many of the issues that were fought for in the 80s, things like, you know, justice for tenants, protections for tenants, housing issues, you know, green space, things like that, are many of the same issues we're fighting for now. What we're seeing, I think, is that people want us to push maybe a little bit harder, a little bit more firm, and they wanted to elect people who were maybe going to have a stronger vision for the future. And Zariah really kind of represented that vision. And it's also, I think, important to say that every seat on city council or state rep or governor or whatever, none of those seats belong to any one person. They are the people's seat. And you only get to be in that seat as long as you're really, the people really want you there. And what we saw in Ward 1 was that people were ready for maybe a little bit of a stronger, more progressive vision for that ward.
Yes, of course. And I certainly didn't mean to demean Sharon Bushar in any way.
No, of course.
She has served the city well in her capacity. But as somebody from my generation used to sing, the times they are a-changing, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
I have to tell you, though, as an observer over these years, the Ward 8 city councilor race was quite a surprise. Tell me about Jane Stromberg.
Yeah, Jane is really exciting. A little bit first just about what Ward 8 is. Ward 8 it's a new ward that was created back in, I think 2015 was the first time that ward existed. And it was really created in part because it was drawn around the mostly UVM, both dormitory and off-campus housing area of Burlington. So it's very, very young. I mean, like probably the average age is like 19 in Ward 8. So, you know, I'm saying that because Jane's 22, so she's actually probably a little bit older than many of her constituents. There was very, very much represented to give, created to give students and, you know, more young people who come from that, from UVM, a voice on the city council. So Jane is, you know, recent college grad, graduated in May, served on the board of the Vermont Public Interest Research Group, has really been pushing for especially climate issues, but also housing issues her entire time as a student. And since she left college, she previously served as an inspector of elections as well. So very active in the community, and she ran a grassroots campaign kind of focused on addressing housing and climate change in Ward 8. And it definitely... it was definitely very appealing to the people of that ward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we certainly congratulate for a very good campaign that she did run. Now, and this will be the first time in a while that none of the city council members will have that letter R next to their name as. Mm-hmm. You know, as the current president of the city council elected not to, not to run a second time, for re-election this time around, as his day job produced some complications. So, do you anticipate that the new president of the city council will be with the P designation?
I think this certainly the ball's in our court. Usually when you win, you know, as well as we have, and you have the most seats on the city council, that would lead to you also winning the council presidency. There are a number of people who are interested in it, as I understand. So those conversations are ongoing. We have until early April on organization day for the counselors to actually vote on that. So I'm sure there will be a lot of conversations between now and then to figure out who that person will be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, Kurt Wright, who is a friend, actually, Kurt, mm-hmm. and of course, now I told him, I said, you're leaving as president of the city council to become a radio announcer. What a fall from grace, right?
But I think some would say the opposite. So
yeah. Anyway, he's a morning talk show host there. In Burlington now. The important question is obviously anything that takes place of substance and of importance and of lasting value does mm-hmm. involve cooperation, and of course that brings up the name Miro Weinberger. Do you anticipate the realization of progressive policy and ideals working with a Democratic mayor? And I might just add, obviously, the next election around for a mayoral election in Burlington, I imagine a number of P's might be eyeing that seat.
Yeah, no, we're already having conversations around, and Vermont Digger ran an article recently around some people considering a run for mayor. So those conversations are already happening, and we're fully expecting to support a candidate next year, as we've done the last two cycles, pretty much every cycle. So that's no big shocker, I think. And we expect that we'll actually have a very good chance of winning back that seat, in a year. But, between now and then there is a year between now and then, and we do, very much look forward to working with the mayor to advance progressive issues. And I think, the mayor's also going to have to think how he can work better with us. He hasn't been in this position where there have been so many progressives on the city council before. And I think the election results, both this year, last year, and 2 years ago when he ran for mayor, because you have to remember that 2 years ago he did not secure a majority of the vote. Right. He actually got less than 50% to two people who were kind of significantly more progressive than him. So I think the city is kind of sending a clear message that they want the mayor to work more with us to advance some of the issues we've been talking about, especially around housing and climate. We look forward to working with him to advance some of that stuff.
We're talking with Josh Ronsky, who is executive director of the Vermont Progressive Party. Now, you were graduated from St. Mike's a few years ago, so it's not long that you've been in this hot seat, and a great resurgence of the Progressive Party. It must be very, very feeling very, very good from your vantage point. Do you see such a resurgence working its way on the statewide level? Certainly the Democratic Party has a near supermajority, but they require a lot of progressive-minded people as well to override a governor's veto, which has been the situation over the last couple of years. How do you see things developing on the statewide scene?
Yeah, I think it's been really exciting on the state side of things as well. We have a small but mighty House Progressive Caucus. It's 7 members, and then there are additional Democrats who we've also endorsed and support, about six more, but they caucus with the Democratic Party. But we work very well with those folks as well. And what you've seen our role has been is to really kind of push for, stronger things that often have majority support within, we're talking about pushing for stronger minimum wage legislation, which I think a recent poll said that 70% of people want a living wage in Vermont, pushing for stronger family medical leave, things, issues like that. So we've slowly seen more interest in the Progressive Party all around the state. More candidates wanting to run with us, affiliated with the Progressive Party, wanting to caucus with us in the legislature. And then we've also seen, we're really excited that Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman is now running for governor. Now, we haven't done a formal endorsement yet. That probably won't be until May. But I think in general, our members are really excited that he's running. He was a 14-year progressive in the House. Then he ran for state senate as a progressive/Democrat, and then lieutenant governor as progressive/Democrat. So I think he has really broad appeal all over the state, being a farmer, small business person, who's really fought for those kind of bread and butter issues like raising the wage, paid family leave, things like that for decades, really.
Well, he has been very consistent in his approaches and obviously waging a very good campaign right now. And there certainly were David Zuckerman to be elected governor. I doubt there would be the need to override too many vetoes of legislation. One quick final thing as we approach the top of the hour. Of course, Vermont's favorite progressive son, if you will, Bernie Sanders, facing a new kind of semi-Super Tuesday tomorrow. How do you see things developing in the presidential race?
Yeah, we're really excited for Bernie. I think his vision that started in Burlington and launched the Progressive Party, it's exciting to see that kind of coming out on the national stage as well. I think he has a good shot of winning the presidency. I think unsurprisingly, the establishment is very nervous and very much kind of pulling out all the stops to prevent him from winning. I think, you know, he has the largest kind of grassroots network of supporters we've seen in a very, very long time. And, you know, we're going to see if that grassroots network is going to beat kind of the establishment politics at play. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be very interesting and very exciting.
Well, Josh, we certainly appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, and we'll keep in touch as political events are developing at a very rapid pace this day. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
We've been speaking with Josh, the executive director of the Vermont Progressive Party here in the state of Vermont. Very quick couple of hours. It always seems to be that way on the Dave Graham program when yours truly steps in and does a substitute host. I think the good news for everybody is that Dave most likely will be back tomorrow. Got fingers and toes crossed, but everything looks okay in that regard. We've got more important information and your telephone participation coming up with Common Sense Radio here on WDEV. So have yourself a great day and certainly enjoy these early spring temperatures outside. See you next time.